Blog Talk Radio.
For more information regarding cryptocurrency and the stock market investing, please don't hesitate to purchase the ebook written by Pedro Thomas, My Haunted Tales of Crypto, Volume 1, available right now for purchase on the following platforms: BarnesandNoble.com, Nook.com, Amazon.com, and the ebook can also be purchased on the website TheCryptoGeekLLC.com. That's TheCryptoGeekLLC.com. We're live here on Blog Talk Radio with Stock Talk with Pedro. I'm your guest host, DJ Innovator. Sorry, I lost train of thought. We are having a little technical difficulty with getting the host online, Pedro. He will be joining us in just a second. So just wanted to say hello to everyone. And if you are not a listener or a subscriber, we definitely hope that you tune into the podcast as we get a regular schedule for the show. We definitely want to let you know that this podcast is for you. It's for the people, by the people. And what we're essentially trying to do is create a dynamic platform for literacy on the financial side of things, but also keeping it trending with topics that we are here talking about each and every week. So it's not just one of these, you know, self-educational courses or podcasts. We're really getting to the meat and potatoes. We're talking the terminology. We're giving you the information. We want you to do your due diligence and research it as well and vet it for yourself. So what we bring to you or what we talk about, we want you to be able to engage with us fully, learn about some of these things yourself, take it to heart, and then do the research. And that way, what I'm saying, what Pedro's saying, what some of the hosts, the guest hosts that call into the show, or even some of the callers are talking about, you're going to be just as knowledgeable about these topics as we are. And that's the key to, you know, self-education is just bringing, you know, as much information to the folks that are listening to the podcast as possible. So without further ado, we're going to get this show going in just a hot second, but just want to, you know, just give you guys a little heads up and talk about the show just a second more. Stock Talk with Pedro podcast show is sponsored by PNT Multimedia Group and Publishing LLC. It's extremely interesting because we've been talking about this for a very long time. And we're here right now in the very moment of launching Stock Talk with Pedro, hosted by Pedro Thomas, and executive produced by me, DJ Innovator. And what is it? Well, it's a podcast based around financial literacy and helping building generational wealth. And so a lot of you have been on the fence. You've been hearing about cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, stock market, maybe Robinhood and other platforms, but you don't really know how to get involved, but you want to be involved, and you're even in some conversations and you're acting like you know, but you don't know because you don't want to be embarrassed. Well, we're here for you. And the thing is, we're not professionals. We're folks that have either made mistakes, but we learned from them, built up our portfolios, got more involved in stocks, learned more about the coins, the altcoins, the stable coins, the ETFs, the NFTs. So we know the terminology and we can help you along the way. So this podcast is really going to be a beneficial tool for especially people of color who have just gotten turned on to this stuff. So we want to help you along the way. Get off the fence and get involved in the market. Get you some stocks, get you some bonds, and you know, keep going and building your generational wealth. And even going to have some professionals come on the show as well and talk about different things from, you know, buying insurance policies that are beneficial for you for building generational wealth, and professionals on the real estate side and all that great stuff. So give us some of your attention. Tune into the podcast. Get involved. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, with no further ado, let me welcome to the stage your host of the show, Stock Talk with Pedro, Pedro Thomas. All right, I guess we are having some technical difficulties. I am waiting for the host to join into the queue. I do not see him, do not know why he's not on. So we're going to divert just a bit and keep the show moving as best as possible. For more information regarding crypto and stock market investing, please don't hesitate to purchase My Haunted Tales of Crypto, Volume 1, available for purchase on the following platforms: BarnesandNoble.com, Nook.com, Amazon.com, and the ebook can be purchased on the CryptoGeekLLC.com. You're listening to Stock Talk with Pedro and DJ Innovator. Still having technical difficulties, waiting for the host to join in or call. Let me make sure that I get him in on the queue to call in. Let's see here. 1 second. Ladies and gentlemen, with no further ado, let me welcome to the stage your host of the show, Stock Talk with Pedro, Pedro Thomas.
Yes, everybody, good evening and welcome to episode number 5. Innovator, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, everybody, welcome to episode 5. Tonight, we have a lot on the menu. We have part 2 of the collapse of FTX, also known as Blockfolio. Will the crypto market ever be regulated is what millions of people are trying to figure out. And last but not least on our topic for tonight, have black investors given up on the crypto and stock markets as far as investing? All right, DJ Innovator, without further ado, I do apologize to our audience this evening for the technical difficulty. I had a little trouble getting on, so I do apologize for that. With that being said, this show is brought to you by Madison Lane Brands on behalf of PNT Multimedia Group and Publishing LLC, formerly known as the Crypto Geek LLC. With that being said, man, a lot more we didn't talk about from the last show, DJ Innovator, in regards to FTX. Man, their former CEO, Sam Bankman-Fried, has been under major, major fire in the media as of late. Speaking of the billions and billions of dollars that were lost overnight, for some reason, he cannot account for where the money has gone. Some people speculate that he is a Bernie Madoff type individual where he has swindled, where they think he has allegedly swindled millions and millions and millions of people for billions of dollars. They state allegedly that he's only worth $100,000 in cash in his bank account. But of course, as you and I know, there is more than one way to skin a cat. you know, being involved in, I'm sure he has other income tied up in real estate and other equities and whatnot and securities that don't show a profit at this time. But with that being said, there is literally almost $2 billion that are unaccounted for of customers' revenue that they've either made off crypto while being on the FTX, also known as Blockfolio site, as well as celebrity ambassadors who were asked to contribute to FTX to help build up their brand. And it's just really terrible, and it's sad. The fact that their former CEO was a acted as if he was a big conglomerate for regulation. But until after everything, after the so-called collapse of his company, allegedly did a podcast show on Vox, and where he expressed the negative connotations in regards to regulation, and allegedly saying fuck regulation, that, you know, fuck people who want to have the market regulated. He didn't see a reason for it. And that just really told a tale. It really told a tale to a lot of investors where he was coming from. And I think it sent a mixed message, because this is the same gentleman that, from what I understand, allegedly went on Capitol Hill to basically give his to give a report to the Senate Judiciary Committee or the House Judiciary Committee in regards to pushing regulation for cryptocurrency and protecting the crypto market space and NFTs. But, you know, after this alleged interview, after the entire collapse happened, just seemed to really go up in smoke. And at this time, it just seemed like it's the bottom of the barrel. You've got entities like BlockFi who are allegedly suing FTX for $250 million. Binance allegedly backed out of their deal to back and help get out of bankruptcy FTX. They backed out. I think they had $1 billion on the table prospective amount, and it just didn't go through for some reason. Binance chose not to act on it, so that took the former CEO back to square one. Offices in the Bahamas through the Bahamian government have been stripped. The building, there was never a building. It was a house. It was a mansion. That's gone. All that's been wiped out. Real estate deals that FTX had, the old American Airlines Arena in Miami, in South Beach, where the NBA team in the Miami Heat play, was the FTX Arena. That has been sold to another conglomerate. Formula One Racing, F1 Racing, which is huge. That's with Lewis Hamilton and all those different guys. FTX was sponsoring that. Stripped, gone, just vamoose in the thin air. So at this point, it's just really, really concerning to me how this individual allegedly was worth at one point $300 billion, and to now allegedly be only worth $100,000, I just find it a little hard to believe. And Innovator, what's your take on that?
Well, I just wanted to dial back into some of the actual facts So I guess essentially my take is it is always what it will be, that when it comes to, you know, investing, finance, you have to do your due diligence. We talk about that a lot. But I also want to get into just some quick facts. So FTX is a Bahamas, or was a Bahamas-based cryptocurrency exchange that was founded in 2019. Now, keep in mind these dates. It was founded in 2019, and at its peak in 2021, had over 1 million users and was the third largest cryptocurrency exchange by volume. So let's think about that. So in 2019, we talked about this the last episode about cryptocurrency not being new, but new in the U.S., new to a lot of people. You know, the younger generation hopped on board full speed ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So 2019, that's we're into what, 2022?
So correct.
Less than 3 years, right? This company, a fly-by-night by all accounts. And is no more. And lots of money is being, you know, is gone. And like you said, right now he's being, you know, called the, you know, the modern day Bernie Madoff of crypto. So we go into FTX at its peak, you know, was a large player in this game. We're going to say the third largest cryptocurrency exchange. Now, we saw some fall in between that time frame. So I want to also go back. We talked about BlockFi. BlockFi, they specialize in consumer finance services. They offered loans to crypto asset owners. And, and they were actually around before FTX. They were founded in 2017. But again, another newer company. Now, who was one of the biggest creditors of BlockFi? Do you know? FTX. So that is one of the reasons why they're suing them, because they were their largest creditor. So think about this. If your creditor is gone, who can't provide you assets, liquidity, what's going to happen to you? Gone. You have no legs under you. So this thing is an implosion. It is something that is taking a life out of crypto markets, so to speak. I mean, they're still alive. I want to say they're on their lifeline. They're still going, you know, it's like when you go in the emergency room and they put the two paddles on you and they, you know, jump start you again. That's what Binance is doing. They have dumped, I want to say, maybe $1 billion back into the crypto world to keep it going, because FTX has been a bomb that just went off in that world. And again, FTX, we want to say that I just want to get the number straight. So SBF, or Sam Bankman-Fried, was technically worth $26 billion. That's the real money he was worth. But what's interesting is now he's playing, you know, the card that I didn't know there was any misuse in any of this. I didn't know anything about that. And it's the CEO. So if the CEO doesn't know what the company is doing, that says a lot about the company. And you got to think about some of the actions that he's done. So Sam Bankman-Fried, he at one point backed off on helping Elon Musk acquire Twitter. And then there's times that he's given millions of dollars to Democrats ahead of the midterm election, about $10 million or so to the Biden campaign for 2020. He's been investing between $1 and $3 billion into the market himself. So there's so much that was going on and so much that wasn't accounted for. He bought a $16 million house in the Bahamas for his parents that he technically said was a business house for the company. And then they're professors, and they're saying, hey, we've been trying to give that, you know, we did use it as a vacation house, but we've been trying to give the deed back to the company prior to the bankruptcy. That's what they're saying. And that's when the bear is caught in a snare, of course he's going to tell you what you want to hear so you can free him, right? So
exactly.
We're being told all of these things after the fact. But meanwhile, you know, regulators, you know, people that are investigating this are saying, but you were out spending these assets of the company and buying all of these properties, because he technically bought, I want to say, over 300, I might be wrong, maybe between 300 or 30 million. I'm not, I've got to go back to the story, but he bought about, so they said about, he had a penthouse that was supposedly worth $40 million. And he had, you know, basically been buying. Yeah, it's true. He had bought up about $300 million worth of real estate in the Bahamas. And that was to incentivize getting, you know, a lot of, you know, Silicon workers basically to come relocate to Nassau and, you know, be a part of, you know, FTX. That's
right.
What
he wanted the main headquarters. I mean, he wanted the Bahamas was the main headquarters of FTX.
Right.
But he really wanted it to look the part. So he wanted like buildings to be eventually to have more employees gravitate towards the Bahamas, build more property down in the Bahamas, would have had to been approved by the Bahamian government first and foremost. But again, at the time he had the money to push that off.
Right.
So I get it.
And he was basically trying to build a city, so to speak, try to look like, how Apple has their, you know, their facility and, you know, he was trying, and their campus, he was trying to, do the same thing. And so it has created like so many aftershocks, BlockFi being one of them. And we don't even know how many more, you know, are going to be unhinged because, you know, folks are scrambling. And essentially the whole thing was essentially the same way that Bernie Madoff had imploded, you know, what he had going on as a hedge fund manager or sorts. But what caused this was people started to pull their assets or their money out.
And they couldn't.
There wasn't enough liquidity or enough cash capital for people to get their money. So when that started happening, what does that do? That causes a panic. You go to the bank and if you can't get $50 out of bank and you know you got $1,000 in that account and you can't get $50, the bank tells you we can't give you $50, and it's about 50 of you at that bank branch at the same time, it's going to be hell all of a sudden. But you imagine if there's thousands of people that are going and saying, hey, I want to cash out of this. You know, I want to get my $20K out of this, you know, index or this situation. I want to go get my $20K. And you can't go get your $20K and there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of you. That causes the red flags. That's when things start becoming fishy. It becomes a thing where people just start going, wait a minute, what's going on? And that was what really started the domino effect. That's why they had to file for bankruptcy. And they're like, wait a minute, but you're supposed to be this. And
did you know that J.P. Morgan Chase was a big supporter of Sam Bankman-Fried?
There were a lot of people that were supporters of Sam Bankman-Fried. We were not even going sugarcoat it. There were lots. I mean, people saw this man as the Messiah, the modern day Messiah in the financial world, that he was a genius. I mean, I was reading reports. I had conversations with people and everybody was touting this man as the greatest next thing. And
correct. Next Zuckerberg.
Yeah. If not better, if not excelled, because he, again, in his landscape had amassed this amount of money in a shorter time than Zuckerberg. I mean, Facebook was years in the making. This, we're talking about 2019 to 2022.
It's
been less
than 3 years.
Exactly. And that's where a lot of people have to be questioning their actions. If they put all of their eggs in that basket in such a time frame. That's no more than what they call a get-rich scheme. I mean, it's always existed. And, you know, I think that people were just over the moon over crypto without knowing all of what they needed to know. And I'm not saying cryptocurrency in itself is the result or the reason of this, but I think that, you know, it's like in banking. I don't have all my money in one bank. Correct. I don't have all my you know, my stocks in one company. I don't have all my stocks on one platform. If I take a hit, of course it's going to be painful, but it won't be devastating. And so that's the thing that you have to kind of diversify your portfolio in all regards. You can't have all your money in one bank. I remember the banking collapse. You know, there was several that went under.
What was that, in the 90s, wasn't it? Bank collapse?
No, that was 2000. It was in the 2000s. That wasn't that long ago. It was housing collapse, 2007-08. Bank, all that went down around the same time. And, you know,
when young President Bush.
I mean, you had WaMu, Washington Mutual. They were, you know, I mean, like, you know, whenever somebody comes up with acronyms, you know, that's when they're supposed to try to be hip and try to catch you. WaMu went under. There were several banks that went under.
Yeah, JPMorgan Chase gobbled them up like a Thanksgiving turkey.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And there were several others. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just, you know, I don't know. I just really think that the collapse of FTX just doesn't seem to bode very well for like Coinbase, for the future of Coinbase, for the future of crypto.com, for the future of Binance and Kraken, I can't think of the other, KuCoin, you know, all of these different exchanges. I just think the collapse of FTX doesn't really bode well for these other entities, for the coming future. And, you know, with that being said, I've asked tons of people this question, will the crypto market ever be regulated? You know, I keep asking that question and I keep hearing the question, but I also keep asking the question, will the crypto markets ever be regulated? I've talked to a few people personally that gave me mixed emotions on the topic. They don't want the market to ever be regulated. They don't want the government, quote unquote, to take over, because after that point, it would be considered watered down, in their opinion. And I posed the question, if something happens to your money, if the market isn't regulated, how do you expect to get insurance? How do you expect to even file a claim if it's not regulated? Because, and this is where my confusion is with in regards to FTX, how can you file bankruptcy when the crypto space hasn't even been regulated? So in essence, it's like you're strictly on an island all by yourself. You're strictly on your own, at your own risk. And I don't know. Maybe I'm clueless to the fact, but I just really don't get it. You know, I just really don't get why certain individuals don't want the markets regulated. I mean, I get it. You know, some people made a lot of money, 190%, 190% APR. I mean, that's unheard of. You know, things like that are unheard of, like that never happens. But in the crypto markets, you had that under some entities. 89% APR finance. I'm like, Jesus, you know how much money that is? Like on the back end? Like, whoa, that's a pretty penny.
It's better than a pretty penny. It's insane. So here's the thing. There will always be mismanagement. There will always be businesses that go under. There will always be those things, but it shouldn't be the norm. It shouldn't be that you're seeing these financial institutions going under in such a short time, having had that much capital, and then the next day in so many regards is gone. So for me, it has to have some regulation, because regulation is essentially a set of rules, regulations that hold you accountable. And these things came about because of failures within companies, within entities that didn't have a defined way of doing things. So it's protocols. So regulation does need to be, in my mind, it's a necessity for success in the long term. And when you're talking about taking people's money in a free market, free world, and doing X, Y, Z with them, I want to know that there are some things in place to, you know, hold someone accountable, but also to protect me in some regard. Because, you know, it's almost like saying, well, tough luck. That was, you know, you invested. Sorry, there's winners, there's losers. You're a loser.
You know, right.
That's what it feels like when you say that. But now I want to just say one quick thing. I'm going to give it back to you. All right. So cryptocurrency in itself is such an appealing thing because of the movement that it allows. It's instantaneous transfer of funds. All right. So got to think about that. That is a world that a lot of people live in. And when I say that, the criminal world lives in that world. So there's a lot of theft. There's a lot of crime. There's a lot of money laundering that thrives in the crypto space. So, of course, there's going to be a lot of people that hate for regulation to get into that. And there's going to be a lot, you know, there's a lot of wheeling and dealing. Like, you, in the real world, you just can't get $50,000 into your account, and not somebody's not going to be, like, knocking at your door or sending you an email or wanting to know where that money came from. You know what I mean? Like, there's... That's where regulations come in. It's like, where did this money start at? You know, where is it? It's got to be traceable. And that is something that regulation brings. Some people don't want it. You might be doing something. You might got a scam. And it's like, okay, 100K in your account. And, hey, I'm sending you 100K right now. It's 808. You'll have it at 809 in your account. Just, it ain't been wired. It's really not traceable. They say, yeah, it's traceable. But that's where the space thrives at, because it's
But here, hold on one second. It is traceable.
To a degree.
Because it's public knowledge on a blockchain. That's it. But, I mean, we're talking about it's a public transaction under serial numbers. And if you're not involved in the space, you're not going to see that or even know what you're looking at.
But let's slow down, though. But if you are a criminal enterprise, right, and let's take this into consideration. Let's speak these three things out. First of all, it is not totally traceable because you do not know the person's true identity. That can be masked. So that's why I'm saying it's not truly traceable. You can be... let's say a trust, and your real government name is not tied to that trust, because a lot of these entities are under pseudonames. So it's truly not traceable to the degree of knowing who, what, when, where, why. You know of the transaction, but you don't know all the intricacies of it. So that's what I want to get out, that's the one thing. And then, again, it goes back into the whole criminal enterprise. Without regulation, Who's not involved? The government. Without the government, there's no FBI, there's no such and such tracing these things. Now they're getting involved in it because they've had to get involved in it because of the theft element, because of these other things that I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, look what happened with the Crypto King. The Netflix special, the Crypto King, the guy, Jerry, that was living in Canada, from Ontario, Canada. I mean, and how he started, just what, built up a $450 million empire to have, if not majority or all Canadians, it was the most popular Canadian crypto exchange that Canada ever had. And a few people in the United States dib and dabbed in it too, especially those individuals that had dual citizenship between Canada and the United States. But literally overnight, he went from, you know, and this is, you know, this is just speculation, but again, he went from like 4,000 to like 450 million in literally less than 12 months. And what was discovered from the documentary movie was the fact that all he was doing was basically paying someone to pretty much gaslight customers into giving more money, you know, buy up these coins, you know, these coins, and doing bogus giveaways. Now, remember we talked about giveaways and stuff before of a good way to track, a good way to bring in customers, you know, to bring attention to yourself, do giveaways, you know, give away things. And, you know, people always like those type of things. You know, those type of things attract a lot of people. Well, that's what he ended up doing. However, when they purchased, it was like basically you're just giving money to him, giving money to him, giving money to him. And on the back end, he was taking the money and money laundering it to other accounts.
Right.
You know, and it just, I mean, one person lost their entire life savings, which I think was about $400,000. I would say, you know, middle-aged guy. He wasn't young. He wasn't old. I think he was a little bit around our age. But literally between all of his investments and that he was able to liquidate in the cash, he had roughly about $400,000 that he was able to liquidate from his 401k, from his deferred comp. He had a couple of IRAs that he dissolved just to get cash to put it on this particular platform, Canadian platform. He was out of Seattle. And again, and you know, Vancouver is like right there. It's across Puget Sound. It's across the Pacific. So it's like it wasn't that far. However, he lost everything. And I mean everything, to the point where he stated he could not even afford to buy ramen noodles. He couldn't even afford that.
Right.
He had to sublease his apartment or his condo. He had a one-bedroom condo, which looked like it was the size of a matchbox, but literally was subleasing it just to pay the rent.
Right.
Just to pay his mortgage. And I'm thinking, where, if you're subleasing, where are you living? He was living in his car.
Yep.
While he's subleasing his condo just to pay the mortgage and to have and to be able to eat. And I was just like, wow. And I mean, like, literally, I call them tycoons, this tycoon had there was no love lost.
Right.
I mean, literally there was no love. There was no support, no love, no nothing. And I mean, to the point where that drove this person to really want to create bodily harm to the guy they considered the crypto king out of Canada. I mean, he really wanted to do bodily harm to him. But the essence of that is the markets need to be regulated, in my opinion. And as you stated, it's an insurance policy. If something goes wrong, I am at some point not totally guaranteed, but at least I'm halfway guaranteed that I can get something back. If I can't recover everything, at least I can recover something with regulation. With no regulation, it's a free fall.
Correct.
It's a free fall.
And you got to look at it. Let's just say this. What is regulation? Regulation is a rule of order having the force of law described by a superior or competent authority relating to the actions of those under the authority's control. So essentially, you do something wrong, you pay for something wrong. That's why the FCC, the FTC, all of these agencies, they exist because they penalize and they do things to companies and hold them accountable where they were not. And these are instances where day to day, the average American has probably been involved in a class action suit, maybe not fully aware of it, but you may have been party to a class action suit. You might didn't file your part of it or, you know, get involved in it. You might have thought it wasn't worth the time. It didn't seem like it might have had a payoff. But I guarantee you the average American has been party to class action suit. Class action suits are also a part of how and why regulation exists, because it holds a party accountable. There was something that, a suit was filed, they were filed liable, or they wanted the litigation to end, so they paid those lawyers to get rid of that case. But again, that's part of the whole process. So when you don't have these government regulations that are effectively rules that define the bounds of legal behavior, when you don't have those things, you have this. And so a lot of people say, well, how can they file bankruptcy? Well, because let's say this really loud and really clear. Anybody can start and legally put a business together. That business does not really have to do anything, because if they aren't bound by regulations, you know, you can create a business tomorrow, right? You could get people to invest in your company, and you can take that money and do whatever the hell you want. Now, regulation holds you accountable. People may not get their money back, but it holds you, the person that started that business, accountable. But if you're creating a business in an area that doesn't have any regulation, don't have any rules, and you just, you know, get involved with it without due diligence. That's why a lot of that stuff, I'm like, hold on. Where's that company at? It's in China. Where's that company at? It's over here. Like, I don't know if I want to do all that. And that's the key reason why they start these companies and put them in these unregulated places where there's, you know, there's no extradition. You know, so, I mean, like, you got to be smart about where you're holding your assets at. You got to be smart about what exchanges you're doing business at. That's why when we talk about this show is about getting education to people, because there's a lot of young people. I swear they know everything about finance right now, because they made, you know, hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars on crypto, and they know everything. Like, they're experts. There are no experts.
Correct.
There are no experts. There are people that are knowledgeable. There are people that think they know what they're talking about. And there's people that have success. But there are no experts in cryptocurrency. There can't be. There can't be. It's too young in its infancy. You have no pattern. You have no real algorithms or anything to go by to substantiate anything you're saying.
Correct. Correct. I totally agree. And again, but, you know, you can't, I mean, it then becomes, can you teach an old dog new tricks? You know, my whole thing is, can you teach a new dog old tricks?
You could try.
I mean, yeah, you could try on both ends, but I mean, how successful is that going to be at the end of the day? And again, regulation. Because of the crypto markets not being regulated, have African-American black investors given up on the crypto and stock markets as a whole? What's your outlook on that?
That's a deep and a good question. But I want to deviate before I answer that. I'm good at deviating, but I want to deviate just really, really, really quick. And it's just really just to talk about the whole landscape of cryptocurrency in its essence.
Okay.
It is what I'll just say this. Here's the thing I want you to want everyone that's listening to the show tonight to just look at or think about. Mm-hmm. So cryptocurrency, all of what we're talking about is in this space, what you would call cyber crimes, when these things go down, when these collapses happen, when these exchanges go down. But if you just do a little research and you look at what cyber criminals do as far as time in jail, what the sentences are for cyber crimes, you will be truly surprised that there is very little time that these folks suffer for the most part. They really don't do a whole lot of time. They don't really get in trouble. They pay a lot of money that they have. But they are way lighter than the average, let's say, drug conviction crime. You know, someone that's got a kilo of a drug will do way more time than somebody that collapses, you know, someone's lifestyle. That's interesting. That's interesting to me. Just Google Wikipedia, computer cyber crimes, computer criminal crimes, and just look at the criminals that when you do the search, look at the criminals that have been arrested, look at what they got arrested for, look at how much time they did. I mean, you can go on Wikipedia, list of computer criminals, and just look at what they did, how long they got, and it is amazing. So that's why I tell people, be careful in this space, because from what I'm seeing...
Time, though. I mean, there was another documentary on Netflix regarding... hackers in dealing with crypto, and basically I think the guy Joel Ortiz from the Boston area, and you know, again, this young man was like 19 to 21 years of age, autistic, but a tech genius regarding computers, knew how to take them apart, put them back together, and he got involved in on the crypto hacking ring and was able to embezzle $5 million in total, and that's just in total. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about like crypto, cash, credit, different jewelry, and he was throwing expensive parties like every day, staying in very, very exclusive Airbnb mansions, out in LA and other different down in Miami and other different destinations around the United States, and ended up, I mean, he didn't have a care in the world when he was doing it, allegedly from the documentary that came out. However, was only served a 5-year sentence, was only sentenced to 5 years. And as a result of his probation or parole,
mm-hmm.
was given a job.
Yep.
Was given
hackers,
a job. Was
hackers will,
a
yep.
job.
Hackers will get a job within the space that they were a criminal in quicker than a person that has done time, like I said, like convicted of possession of drugs and with intent to distribute. They will do their sentence, do their 15, 20 years or whatever it is they get, come out and not be able to get a job because they're a convicted felon, right? But these cyber criminals will get a hand spanking and then get rewarded with a posh job in internet security. Don't believe me, just watch. It happens. It's been done. It's proven. You can look at most of those shows that talk about cyber crimes and watch what the person who did the crime, what they're doing right now. That is what is amazing. And I was just reading as we were talking, I was just reading about one guy. I don't even want to butcher his name, but he essentially co-created the Trojan horse SpyEye. He stole from 217 American banks in total, stole about $400 million, and allegedly donated all the money. There's no proof of it. There's no record of it. They can't track the money. He did this in 2016. Jail sentence, 15 years, $400 million. He can do 15 years. That's less time than the average person has to work. He come out of that jail cell. You know he's got money hidden, right? 15 years is all he got, $400 million. There's people that get more time robbing a bank. Don't believe me? Just watch, right? Go rob a bank with a gun, and you will get more time than that. But you rob a bank with a computer, and you get less time than that. The system is always set up to benefit others. And you know typically who cyber criminals are. So I'll leave it at that. But what I'm, you know, essentially what I'm saying is got to be careful out in these spaces because right now it's proven to be pump and dumps. They pump up these cryptocurrencies. They pump up these coins. They pump up these assets, dump them, and everybody's waiting for it to go back to the moon. They're holding that coin. Back to the moon. So as far as our people of color, are they disenfranchised? Maybe, because you know we're really hard to push out of something. Once we see that it's a lick, once we see this golden, mm-hmm. we pretty much trust that golden lick until it's really, really disputed. Because I've been listening to some podcasts and these folks are like, yeah, just wait it out, get Bitcoin on the dip, it's gonna go down to about $9,800. Go back up. It's going to go back up. And you want to be in. You want to be in. So I'm not so certain and sold that we're disenfranchised. I think that, you know, it's going to take, you know, something more for people to really be disenfranchised because we're just getting in on it. So it's like, man, now don't tell me about something where I can get rich off of putting a few dollars in and then pull it back. And then you got to think about that. That might be the golden cow right there. That might be the golden calf all along.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are now just finally getting into the finance space. You know, back in the days, it was, you know, our counterparts, their parents and their grandparents, they were already involved in stocks and markets. You know, we had grandparents didn't have, you know, for the most part, not all, but we had grandparents that didn't really have money. They didn't have wealth like that, the average person. But, you know, there's some that did have grandparents and parents that were, you know, well-to-do. But the average, no. You know, I come from the line of families, you know, have to beg, borrow, and plead to bury somebody. There weren't policies. People weren't working and saving like that or working and putting their assets to help benefit them to create generational wealth. We're just living day to day. So I don't know that we're truly disenfranchised right now. I think that, you know, folks are going to, you know, kind of watch and see where it goes. A lot of people aren't even paying attention to this story, you know. So we just got to kind of wait and see. But I just hope that people are a lot more cautious, that they're just doing their due diligence and not just looking at, you know, these groups that they may be in, these chat groups or whatever, that are telling you, hey, invest in this, go to the moon, go to the moon. You know, buy my class. Right, buy my class. Get this $200, $300 class, and I'll tell you everything that you can go Google. I'll tell you everything that you can go, you know, get on YouTube and learn for yourself. I'm going to charge you $300, brother, and then you'll get this money that I got. Because, you know, knowledge isn't free.
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, I mean, again, and that leads into the last topic of conversation for the night, which is my question. Have black investors, African-American investors, given up on the crypto and stock markets in regards to investing?
I haven't. I'm optimistic. I haven't given up totally on, well, I haven't, definitely haven't given up on the stock market. And I have not totally given up on crypto, but I'm just being cautious. I need to see where it goes. I need to see how it plays out. I just don't see something that jumps up to 70,000, just about 70, 60 something thousand back down to, you know, going down 30,000, 40,000 is something I can just be a firm believer in. I've got to kind of wait and see. And maybe I may lose out. I'm definitely not an early adopter on crypto. I'll definitely be honest there. But I'm just waiting. I'm optimistic. And I'm just going to see how it plays out. There's a lot of players in that field. So, you know, there's going to be some more people that fall off anyway, because you just can't have that many fingers to that many hands without being confused or, you know, some things happening. I mean, there's got to be some cannibalism in the space. There's got to be some consolidation for it to really thrive. You can't have every company that comes to the forefront being a leader. So that's why you're going to see these number twos and threes and fours collapse, because there's too many people in the space doing too much too quickly.
I mean, and when you say too quickly, I mean, what are you really, are you saying, you know, like, are you referring to the get-rich-quick schemers, or,
I just don't see how people have made, I mean, and so, like, people were trying to say that Sam Bankman-Fried is broke. Did you not hear where I said he bought $400 million in real estate? Like,
right.
You have to diversify your portfolio. If you're sitting there like a dummy holding all of your big money in crypto and it's just sitting there, you've got to be stupid. Because you definitely, if you go up, you pull out. You readjust those, you know, winnings, those assets. You don't leave that stuff in the space. Because investing in general is not just a space where you just leave money continuously forever. You have to start withdrawing your gains and putting it elsewhere to work for you. That's the whole thing of making money. It's, I'm going to take where I made, and if you have 500, you make 1,000, you leave 500 there, you take that 500 and make it do something else. You know, you don't leave it there just so that it could diminish. That 500, that $1,000 gets diminished to 600 and you right back at five. No, you got to take where you can and make it work for you. You're just sitting there. Oh, okay. It's going to, you know, make 2,000. It's going to make 3,000. It might, but then it might not. So you got to know when to fold.
But the right, but like you said, what's really the probability of that being successful?
Right, because I can tell you, I'm holding some. I'm still holding some sheep that ain't worth shit. I'm still holding some doge that I'm waiting on the 12 cent go back up. You know,
right? That so-called dollar.
Right. It wasn't, but it has an eclipse to where I want it to be. So you know, I mean, like I might just cash out if I see it hit 11 cents or whatever it's going to be and just be like, okay, I'm good. Because you got to know when to get out. And You know, that's why I say a lot of people got rich and a lot of people are holding. You holding, hoping that it gets back to that point so you can then celebrate, but you might not.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I just know of, I know a few people who are still going hard in the paint as far as the crypto markets and investing, as well as the stock market. For example, I haven't invested anything new in the crypto space at all. As a matter of fact, I'm very apprehensive on that. However, on the flip side of the stock market, bought 2 more shares of Amazon. Bought 2 more shares of Google. But I've already had shares in those two companies. I say all that to say I'm not buying anything new. I am just continuing and building on what I already have.
What you know works. These companies that have been around longer than 3 years and 4 years, they have a lot more to lose than these other companies. Because once they're gone, they're gone.
Crypto-wise, I'm investing any more money. They won't get another quarter from me until I see regulation. I mean, because at the same time, the IRS is charging 30 to 36% income tax,
mm-hmm.
with two property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Or crypto, how do you equate that? It's gotta be worth it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it has to be worth it in order for someone to sacrifice 30 to 36% income tax,
right?
Which is the same as property. Like,
right.
And I just give an example. If I'm holding $500 in crypto, there's no way on God's green earth I should have to pay 30 to 36% tax on that.
It was a shock to me when I filed my taxes. And, you know, so my tax preparer said, this charge is just for your regular taxes. And then this charge of $60 or whatever it was, the filing fee for the crypto. I'm like, but I ain't even got, you know what I'm saying? I don't even have that much money in crypto. So it was like, I basically threw some money away just to hold some crypto. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just, a filing charge to have crypto. And it just was like, wait a minute, is crypto worth all of what it's said to be? You know? You know my personal experience and why I am the way I am. And that's one instance besides the other holdings. But there's no way that I'm going to, at this point in my life, take another dime and put it into there until I start seeing a recoup or gains on what I already hold. It wouldn't make sense.
That's just crazy. I mean, that's 30 to 36% tax on crypto? I mean, and again, let's say I didn't have, let's say I had $100.
Right.
So literally I'm going to pay 30 to 36 cents on every dollar.
Right.
You gotta be kidding me, man. You have to be kidding me. Like, literally, I mean, I'm just trying to understand mentally, how does the government equate crypto with property real estate taxes? I don't get it. I do not get it. That is complete apples and oranges.
I think that they're going to probably even have to dial that back because of such the losses. Because what has it been, a crypto winter or whatever they call it? Because it ain't been a crypto summer.
No, it's been a red. They call it the red winter. It's been a red winter.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're not really in winter yet. But, I mean, we will be later on this month. But, man, it's just been crazy. We had a bloody summer,
right,
you know, in crypto. I mean, crypto has been pretty much red majority of the year. I mean,
right,
let's call it for what it is. But, by no means if someone is holding just a measly, and I'm not saying this just measly, I'm just using that as an adjective, people, but I'm saying if you have $100 on a crypto exchange only and you go to file your taxes, literally your tax preparer or TurboTax, okay, is going to ask, do you own any crypto?
Own any crypto. And the minute you say yes, you're getting hit with another charge. That's just what I was saying. You're getting hit with a charge just for owning it. And again, like I said, I have some sheep. I got some Doge. I got I don't have any Bitcoin. I don't have any Bitcoin. But I got some SOL. I got some ADA, I got, you know, some other ones, some Ethereum. But yeah, I'm just being straight honest with you, bro. I don't have to lie. I do not have $500 worth of crypto, and I had to pay $60 for the holdings that I had. I was just like, really? Like, I'm paying to own this bullshit. I'm sorry. I'm paying to own it. I don't even have that much of it. Like, you know, I got major money in other stuff, and they not even taxing me. Like, I pull out my, you know, my platform. I print out all of the holdings, and like, yeah, okay. You don't even have that much, you know what I'm saying? Like, gains is, like, killing you like that. So, right, because right. That's the other thing, people. We got to be careful of that. Like, y'all be talking about going to the moon. There's a word that you have to be knowledgeable of, or you will be hit with it later when you least expect it. Pay attention to this word, people. It's called capital gains.
Yeah.
Capital gains can be a big thing. Like, you may not even know it. Like, a lot of folks don't even pay attention to this. But when you are making money on these exchanges and you taking them gains and, not reporting it, Uncle Sam, because of regulation, can come back and tax you on those capital gains. So there's, like I said, there's reasons why people don't want regulation, but be careful of that. Be careful of going to the moon. Don't go get them Balenciagas. Don't go get those, you know, those expensive things without preparing for those capital gains and being reporting them and paying the taxes on them.
Yeah, exactly. Don't go get the ugly Balenciagas that look like, you know, Skechers with an added bottom to it. I mean, this is just ridiculous. I mean, please don't go get those horrible moon boots.
I didn't even like moon boots back in the day. And I see your boy rolling them moon boots, walking around with firemen. They look like fireman boots mixed with moon boots. I hated them joints back in the day. And Muggs is walking out here like they the shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, them marshmallows, like you got marshmallows on your feet, bruh,
can you imagine the odor walking around all day and the boys and they take off their feet, them shoes?
Ooh, they better have odor eaters like a mug in them.
Come on. I mean,
have like three layers of odor eaters.
I mean, you in California or Texas or Florida and you wearing them hot-ass boots?
Bruh.
I mean, come on, your feet gotta stink. After a while, your feet's gonna stink. I'm sorry. Everybody's feet sweats. So, I mean, it's like if you're taking multiple showers a day, that's one thing, and you're switching off and from one alien boot to another, I get it. But, dude, the average person don't have the money like that to be switching off. So, nah. But you're absolutely right, innovator. Capital gains is what people need to worry about. Whether it be in the stock market, whether it's in the crypto markets, if they're making money, you will be taxed. And again, for those that are listening, any money you have in the crypto space is going to be taxed as a property tax. And again, you don't even own real estate, but it goes down with the IR, Internal Revenue Service, which, again, I believe is a fraudulent way to charge somebody. I believe that's fraudulent. If someone from the federal government could please come on our show and explain to us how they come up with equaling cryptocurrency gains and or losses to property tax for
I want to say almost they put it in the boat of a foreign
entity.
It's like a foreign entity, foreign coin, foreign currency, some type of way. Like, I talk to my tax preparer. I go to him every year, and he was just telling me about it. And he was like, you know, they got to constantly get updated on all of this stuff, too, because it's super new to them. So it's like, okay, this thing just started appearing on people's, you know, tax returns. And so they started, you know, they had to get educated as to what it is, how they tax it, why they tax it, you know, and to what degree. And, you know, this comes from what the IRS, which is government, which is regulation. So, you know, it's like, hey, Sam going to get his way in one way or the other. And since we ain't regulating y'all, we're going to tax y'all higher. Think about it.
Yeah.
I mean,
but if you haven't made anything in crypto, I mean, it's one thing to with stocks. I mean, if I have very minimal capital gains in the stock market, then I'm not taxed like that. I mean, I've been filing taxes forever. But literally, as far as investments, since 2017, 2018, and I'm going to tell you right now, it's not the same. But when you mention cryptocurrency, and yes, I'm holding cryptocurrency, watch out. Because the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, is dead on the – Johnny on the spot. They are Johnny on the spot. They want their money. And it's like, well, wait a minute, this is digital. Oh, no, we don't care. You know, I honestly feel that once the government knows that you have cryptocurrency, they beam on you like Scotty, like it was Star Trek. Like, literally.
You know what I'm going to do with mine? Mine is going to get, what do they say when they send it to the other planet? Mine about to materialize on Mars.
I mean, it just seems like now you got an X on your back. Those individuals now have X's on their backs because the government's looking at them. I mean, I swear to God, since I've been involved in the space, I've received phone calls from the federal government, like crazy phone calls. Like, and they'll have like government, U.S. government on the call ID. I'm like, what? And I'm like, hold on. Man, now, I know scammers do, you know, be scamming calls, but come on now. Come on now. I mean, I just think that because I'm involved in the space so heavily, like, I think, you know what I'm saying? And then I wrote the book. I have a book out, My 100 Tales of Crypto, Volume 1. By the way, you guys go ahead and grab that at BarnesandNoble.com. Amazon.com, thecryptogeekllc.com. Please go grab that. The book is on sale right now for $4.99. Check that out. I've got volume 2 and 3 that'll be coming out in 2023. We also have a children's book that we will be releasing. Has nothing to do with crypto and investments, ladies and gentlemen, but we will have a children's book, a series of children's books that we will release and also 2023 going into 2024 and a couple of other projects, book projects for 2024. But, I mean, literally, P&T Multimedia Group and Publishing LLC will be doing big things in the future. Madison Lane Brands, you're going to be hearing about them. They're going to be doing some big things. Spotlight TV Entertainment with WorldNet Radio. You got some big things coming up, Innovator as well.
Yes, sir.
So, I mean, we got a lot of stuff on horizon. This is just the beginning. Episode 5 books. And I like just want to thank everybody, whoever tuned in, whoever didn't. God bless you. We are on. It's just the beginning. And that's all I can really say. This is just the beginning. Just wait and see what we have more in store. That's later to come. But again, this is just the beginning. And everybody have a good night. Stay blessed. Be safe. And, you know, live free.
All right. As I close out, I just wanted to get the headlines real quick. Kanye West loses another major deal amid anti-Semitic controversy. The deal with him purchasing Parler, the Twitter competitor, is dead in the water. That just was reported at 6:37 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So Kanye West is, again, losing another deal that he was, you know, pretty happy about. So we're closing out Stock Talk with Pedro with that bit of news. We'll see you on the flip side. Thank you for listening, tuning in, and we will catch you later. Thanks for listening to Stock Talk with Pedro. This is DJ Innovator, the executive producer, and I just wanted to say thanks for listening to the podcast. We've got a whole lot more coming your way, so stay tuned. We'll see you soon.